Hi, everyone. Welcome to Keeping a Notebook. I'm Nina LaCour. I'm back with a mini-season to welcome my new novel, Watch Over Me, into the world. If you're listening on the day this episode comes out, on Wednesday, September 16th, I hope you'll also tune in tonight to join me and my friend Tiffany D. Jackson, whose wonderful new novel, Grown, is also newly out this week. Tomorrow, on Thursday, September 17th, Stephanie Perkins and I will be on Instagram Live talking about Watch Over Me and the 1944 classic film Gaslight. I am also offering a Saturday morning writing workshop through If You Were Here Now. And on October 10th, Alana K. Arnold and I will be co-leading a class on writing, reading, and revising using Watch Over Me as a case study. Details for all of these events are in the show notes. You can also subscribe to my newsletter for a behind-the-scenes look at launching a new novel in the midst of the pandemic. All right, on to the episode. The question I get the most from interviews and readers and visits to book clubs and schools has to do with where my ideas for novels come from. So today, I'm going to start with a true story, a ghost story. It was broad daylight, a beautiful day, sunny and warm as it almost always was in the small city I lived in then, around 20 miles east of San Francisco. We'd moved there to buy our first house, a postage stamp of a place, 700 square feet on a one-way street across from an overgrown hill. It was the afternoon, time to take my daughter to a class. I buckled her into her car seat and pulled onto the road. I drove for a couple blocks and then slowed down. Out the window, on the sidewalk, was a woman. She was very old. She wore a long white nightgown in the middle of the day. In one hand, she clutched an oversized plastic daisy, and in the other, what appeared to be the gnarled root of a tree. She stood on the corner, staring vacantly across the street. There was no place to pull over, but I was worried about her. So old, so alone, so clearly in need of supervision. I thought she might be lost. Maybe she'd wandered out of her home when her caretakers weren't looking. I worried she'd walk into the street, that the cars whirring past her wouldn't register. Who knew what she saw through her glazed over eyes? Who knew what she might do and what harm would come of it? I decided to turn around. I turned left and left and left again, until I was on the quieter side street. I pulled over and stopped the car. There she was, up close. Vacant eyes, nightgown, plastic daisy, gnarled root. Her hair was so thin and so white. "Why did we stop?" my daughter asked. "I'm worried about this woman," I said, looking out the window. "I think she might need help." My daughter was quiet, so I glanced to the back seat. She was looking out the window, just as I had been. I saw that her eyes were fixed on the corner, right where the woman stood. But when my daughter responded, she asked, "What woman?" "The woman right there," I said, "right where you're looking." My daughter craned her neck. She looked around. "But Mommy," she said, "I don't see a woman." When I'm deep into the writing of a novel, the line between life and fiction blurs. Every encounter is full of possibility, and I was already working on Watch Over Me when I saw the woman on the corner. I was in the early note-taking stages, and here was a ghost for my ghost story. Different from the glowing figures I'd imagined, but so striking I knew she had to belong somewhere. And so I put her in my novel, and she exists in both worlds now. In the world where I am a mother and a wife taking my daughter to a class, an adult with a life that I've made, and in the world of my character, Mila, who, at the time she sees this woman, is at the mercy of her mother and her mother's new boyfriend, Blake. Blake took my phone away. "We don't need these," he said. "What we need is human connection." He was standing in fur-lined slippers on the concrete foundation, the frame of the house towering over him, the last of the evening light filtering through the place where the roof should have been. My mother had just left for work. She would be gone all night. "I want to show you something," he said, slipping my phone into his pocket. "Follow me." I followed him to the space he called his room. There, tarps hung his walls with blankets lining them for insulation. Layered carpets spread over the concrete, and on top of some of them was his mattress. He opened a box and dug through it for a velvet pouch. Inside was a pair of mother-of-pearl opera glasses. He handed them to me. "These can be a lot of fun," he said, "the old-fashioned kind. Let's fix some dinner and you can see what you find when you take the time to really look. You don't need screens. You need real life." While he grilled vegetables on a barbecue outside the house, I gazed through the glasses at the sky. I saw the stars and the moon. Some birds flew by and I lost sight of them. Then scanned down and there they were, on a telephone wire. And below them was a window, lit up, with a family in the living room working a puzzle. I watched the father slip a puzzle piece over to a kid who was a little younger than me. I could have watched them for a long time, but it felt like spying. I knew I wouldn't want some strange girl peering in on me when I didn't know about it, even if she was only curious and didn't mean any harm. I turned the glasses downward and that's when I saw her. A woman, ancient, with vacant eyes. She stood in a nightgown on the street. In one hand, she held a bouquet of oversized plastic daisies. In the other, she held what looked like the gnarled roots of a tree. She was on the sidewalk, alone in the dark, staring at nothing. "Blake," I said. He was carving into wood with a pocket knife while he waited for the food to cook. "Mm-hmm," he answered, eyes fixed to his project. "Look at that lady," I said. He kept carving for a moment and then saw I was handing the opera glasses to him. He took them, and I pointed down at the street. "What's she doing? Do you think we should help her?" He lifted the glasses to his eyes and shifted the focus. He remained turned toward where I had been looking for a long time. I could see her, even without the glasses, standing perfectly still, then swaying back and forth before growing still again. "What lady?" Blake asked. But he had been looking right there. He was still looking. And there she was. "The old woman." "I don't see an old woman." "Right there," I said, "with the fake flowers and that other thing." "I don't know what you're talking about," he said. "You must be tired. You should go to bed." He folded the opera glasses and dropped them back in their velvet pouch. "But I haven't had dinner yet. It's still early." I couldn't tell how early it was, though. I didn't have my phone. I didn't own a watch. "You're so tired you're seeing things," Blake said. "You don't feel right. Go lie down." I did as he told me. "You know," he said the next morning, we were warming water over the fire for coffee, "I had a thought about this so-called woman you saw last night." "She was right there," I said. "It's so weird you didn't see her." "I'm wondering, was she by any chance wearing a nightgown?" "Yes." "And was her hair very short?" "Yes, that was her." "And were the fake flowers daisies by any chance?" Yeah, I think they were." He poured coffee beans into a hand grinder and turned the handle. "Her name was Lorna," he said. "She lived in the house across the street for years, but she died last May." Many listeners of this podcast have told me that they like to listen right before they begin writing, that it gets them grounded, in the mood to work. That's basically the best compliment. It's exactly what I want from this little show. Especially right now, I want it to feel like we're sitting in a cafe together. Maybe you've just gotten some tea and I've ordered coffee. And we're setting up our laptops or taking out our pens and paper. If that was the case, what I would say now is that something that often goes through my head when I'm writing is what Aristotle said about tragedy, tragic heroes to be specific. He argued that these characters should be true to life and yet more beautiful. I like to apply that to storytelling in general, to heighten everything, to make things just a bit more meaningful or magical or special than they often feel in real life. Or sometimes, as in the case of what I just read, I flip it. I make an unsettling thing even more unnerving. Maybe an untended garden becomes a thicket of weeds. Maybe an unpleasant sound becomes unbearable. This concept never ceases to inspire me. I hope it does the same for you. Again, if you're listening in real time, I hope that you're able to join me for some of my events this week. The details are in the show notes. I'll be back tomorrow with another episode. I'm wishing you well wherever you are.